Well, hi again. 1 Corinthians 13, we're plodding our way along through this, and been some good, challenging stuff. I hope you guys are being challenged or learning something, or at least smiling nicely and nodding your heads or whatever. Man, there's been some rich, deep stuff in here. We learned the last couple, I've got about 5 or 6 review slides again, and then hopefully we'll dive into a new one. And love is, these are the two things that love is. Love is patient, and love is kind. Now we get into the love is not, but we'll finish up the love is. We hit kindness last week. You guys remember about patience? I mean, I wasn't going to even talk about this, but I had really good opportunity this week to practice my unmet expectations. My wife was in stores. It's a true story. And I could feel myself getting a little rattled and a temperature rising. And I thought, what would Pastor Kirk say? He would say, these are unmet expectations. Nobody said this was going to be 30 seconds in. Do you know what I mean? If you were here for that, talking about often our lack of patience is because the story in our head doesn't match what reality is. And 99 times out of 100, that story is created by me. So I create this story that I'm going to go to Teals and it's going to take 4 minutes to get through the line. And I go go up there and every line has someone in and they all are doing their Thanksgiving shopping. So they got 3 carts, you know. I become impatient. Why? Because I'm angry that people are getting groceries? Well, no. Because I'm angry that they're buying too much groceries? Of course not. I like people to be fed. We love food. Well, because all the lines are full? Well, I'm glad that Teals is getting business done. Why am I upset? It's because it doesn't match the story that I had in my mind, my expectations. And so then there's a lot of angst and what we call impatience. And so we just were saying that the Holy Spirit needs to help us change that story. And he's given us that power. And so this week, I was putting it into practice. Nobody seems impressed except Morgan. Because Morgan has sat out at our house how many times with counseling and knows what a turkey I am. So she's like, whoa, that's good. If you were working at all on it, that's good. She knows. So I remember sitting in the car going, wait a minute, where's this story coming from? Wait, this is my story. Wait, I don't need to be upset because I've just decided that she should have been out by now. But nobody ever said that. That was my story I created. And so I recreated the story, and I read through some Bible, and I watched some videos, and she came out, and I was nice and relaxed, and we're still going strong. Yeah. So that's patience. I wasn't even going to say it, but I thought I had some good examples where I'm kind of just putting that application into mine. And kindness is what we went through last week. It's to be good-natured, gentle, tender. Do these describe you? Affectionate, courteous, soft, and mild. It wishes well. It's not harsh, sour. Look at your neighbor and see if they're sour. It's not harsh or sour or morose. I'm sure that's a word you use every day. I said last week it's definitely from an older commentary. Or ill-natured. Being kind means being generous, helpful, and caring, friendly, considerate. We worked our way through a bunch of different verses, but it says in Ephesians 4, 31 and 32, get rid of all bitterness, rage, anger, harsh words. Say harsh words. So what it's saying is don't say harsh words, right? I said, say harsh words. It's telling you, don't say harsh words. Get rid of harsh words. Get rid of slander. Get rid of this nasty talking, feeling, thinking, being, as well as all types of evil behavior. Instead, be kind. What's the Greek word? Christos. Yeah, some of you guys remembered that on Wednesday night. Be kind. And the Greek word is Christos. Be kind to each other, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, just as in God through Christ. Just as God, through Christ, has forgiven you. Why do we care about the Greek word Christos? Because it's such a unique word that in a couple other scriptures, Jesus said, come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, for I'll give you rest. My yoke is easy. My yoke is Christos. It's easy. And then the second one that we looked at that seemed weird was, nobody takes new wine and puts it in old wineskins. You put the new wine in new wineskins. That's talking about the new covenant. But then they throw that last verse in there. Anyone that's had the old wine is going to say the old is Christos, better. The word that they use better is the Greek word Christos. So it's this idea of I was trying all kinds of examples, guys, Jim and Kathy, and they were just falling flat. I said, you know, you kind of snuggle up with a blanket or, you know, put your, you know, sweats on at night or whatever. I was getting nowhere. And then I said, like a well-worn cowboy hat. Yeah, and then everybody got it. They're all like, oh, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, one that's been broken in, a saddle that fits just right, you know, cowboy boots that are good pair of jeans that's not stiff and scratchy anymore. That's what that word Christos means. And that's what being kind means. Is what your encounter with people should be easy and like comfortable. That's what kindness is. It's disarming. And it invites you in. Come on. At its core, kindness is doing good to others. But it's doing good to others from the heart. From the where? From your inside. From the heart. From a heart of goodwill. It means to do good to others in thought, word, and deed. This is the core center of our loving kindness. I think there's only maybe one or two more slides. Kindness. It's not just that we do good to others. It's how we do good to others. Kindness is how we do good to others. Anybody can do good to others, but it doesn't mean you're kind. Does that make sense? Now, immediately we think of kindness as, oh, my, you know, Johnny gave me, you know, 4 pieces of candy. Whoa. But if Johnny's like, here, take these. My mom said I had to give them to you, right? The end result is the same. You still got 4 pieces of candy from Johnny. But one of them you're going to say, oh, he's so nice. And the other one you're going to say, I guess I'll take these. He's mad at me now because I had to take his candy because his mom said. You know what I mean? So it's how we do good to people. We talked about this guy. So many times we talked about Mr. Christian Porcupine. See, Mr. Christian Porcupine, he's just coming back from the food shelter, right? He went and served poor. He dropped off his tithe at church earlier this week and told some people about Jesus on the way. But you know what everybody's experience of Mr. Porcupine is? Oh, right? It's not that he doesn't have a good heart, but there's no kindness in him. Okay? He's just a little prickly. And I said that kindness is the ability to get to someone's heart without having to crawl through barbed wire to get there. It's this, I have access to you because there's something about you that says that you're focused on me right now for whatever reason. Like it's you're kind. Instead of this guy, we want to be more like this guy. We don't want to be a porcupine. We don't want to be a porcupine. All right. Patience. So finishing up these two, patience is how I react to things said and done towards me. Remember, patience is also long-suffering. And kindness is how I act towards others. So one is towards me, one is towards others. All right, we're going to be done with this. Now we go to some more words in this verse. We are actually on our third word in this verse now. Love is patient, love is kind. And now we got 8 things that love is not. And let me just, on a side note, guys, I said it last week and probably a couple weeks ago. This is not for the faint of heart. We read these verses at Dylan and Mary's wedding yesterday, and it's, oh, we're so happy. Love is patient and kind, right? But man, when we start digging into these, if you read them at a wedding, they're nice. If you read them in your devotion and God expects obedience from you when you read them, they're not nice. So if you're not getting your toes stepped on, then I apologize. I'm not doing my job well, and I just pray that the Holy Spirit will get my words into your hearts the way that they need to be, because these are hard things to hear. And I don't know if you just think of 1 Corinthians 13 as such it's all about love. It's all about love. It is all about love, and it's grueling. So We're going to get through envy today, hopefully. I've got a lot of slides on this, but I just kept finding such good stuff, and I just didn't know when to quit. Envy. Love does not, everybody say it, love does not envy. Love does not, is not envious, it's not jealous. So what is the definition? Envy is the jealousy over the blessings and achievements of others. We kind of want what someone else has. It's a resentful, dissatisfied longing. How's that for a set of words? A resentful, dissatisfied longing for someone else's possessions, position, fortune, achievements, or success. And I just want to say before we go any further that everybody in this room has, at one time or another, you've dealt with envy or jealousy. And it is just a home wrecker. It wrecks relationships. It wrecks churches. It wrecks businesses. It wrecks friendships. Envy is just cancerous. And once it gets rooted in, we're going to see a little bit later, it's pretty profound. Envy, John Piper says this, envy is a desire for something with the resentment that another one is enjoying it and you are not. Let's just hang out there a second. You don't just want what someone else has. You're upset that they have it and you don't. Envy is ugly. Now, I'm just going to say, it's going to get better. It's going to get worse before it gets better. I hope we're all squirming a little bit because honestly, don't we want to grow? Don't we want to become mature followers of Christ? And it's digging into some of this hard stuff that I hope that we've got some redundant slides. Well, it's going to kind of say the same thing, but it's going to say it in just a little different way. I hope that it exposes some parts in our heart because we're really good. The Bible tells us that our heart is deceptively wicked. Our heart is really good at tricking us. And I'm just hoping that myself included, as we walk through this, we're going, that I'm not envious, but that sounds like me, right? Like I'm hoping that we don't, but if there is any envy in our hearts, I'm hoping it uncovers it because we don't want it in there. There's such a beautiful freedom of living without it, and there's such a bondage and cancerous ugliness about living with it, and it creeps in places that we don't think it is going to show up. So it's a desire for something with the resentment that another one is enjoying it and you are not. I just thought that was so profound. That it's not just wanting what someone else has. I'm upset that they have it and I don't. That's kind of ugly. The word here used may express any wrong feeling that's excited or brought up inside of us in view of the good of others. So let me explain what that means. Anytime you look at someone else and they've got a blessing in their life, they're doing well, they're healthy, happy, whatever, they're succeeding in whatever they're doing. Anytime there's a wrong feeling excited in us, the root of that is envy. Anytime that we have ill will towards them or anger or we want something bad to happen to them or whatever, that's the root is envy. What do these people have in common? How many of you guys have heard of some of these people? Abel, Joseph, David, Jesus. I hope you've at least heard of one of them. Jesus is the one you pray to if you have given your heart to him. And David was a king of Israel, and he wrote most of the Psalms. Joseph was the Red Sea, that was Moses. Joseph was, he was a guy. Coat of many colors, that's the one I was trying to think of. He was in the Old Testament, in Genesis, and Abel was one of the first set of brothers. Right? Okay. I was just going to talk about these guys, and I was not going to share the verses until I started looking through the verses, because I had a bunch of other slides that I wanted to get through. And I saw we're going to go through the verses. And I want you to look at a pattern that starts to develop here. And I showed it to Marnie yesterday, and her eyes got big, and she's like, whoa, exactly. All right, let's look at Cain and Abel. Genesis chapter 4, 4 through 5 says this. Abel was a son of Adam and Eve. Okay. Abel also brought a gift. the best portion, say best, the best portions of the firstborn lambs from his flock. The Lord accepted Abel and his gift, but he did not accept Cain and his gift. This made Cain very angry, and he looked dejected. The next section says, why are you so angry? The Lord asked Cain. Why do you look so dejected? You will be accepted if you do what's right, but if you refuse to do what's right, then watch out. Sin is crouching at the door, eager to control you, but you must subdue it and be its master. And then we skip ahead a little bit. And while they were in the field, Cain attacked his brother Abel and killed him. So Abel offers a sacrifice. It's accepted by God. Cain offers a sacrifice. It's not accepted. Cain gets jealous and angry towards the relationship and the acceptance that his brother has. And so he has that. So what does he do? God comes and says, look out, buddy. I love it that God showed up and said, why are you so sad? Why are you so stirred up inside? What's going on? And God pointed out, sin is crouching at the door. It's right there. It's wanting to come in and get a hold. And Cain didn't listen. And because of that, Abel died. We're going to start to see a pattern here. This envy is going on. God's like, God didn't use the word envy there, but he said, sin is crouching at your door. Like, something's about to happen if you don't deal with this. Let's look at Joseph and his brothers. Genesis chapter 37, verses 11, and then 17 through 18. His brothers, I guess the S needed some space. It's an introvert S. All right. Look out of my bubble. His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter. This is talking about Joseph. So Joseph, you guys remember the story? Joseph has this dream and stalks of wheat and stars and everything's bowing down to him. And he goes and shares the story, you know, and it didn't go over well with the audience that he was sharing it to because they didn't think that was so cool. Joseph was like, I had a cool dream. And his brothers were like, not cool dream. Joseph went, verse 17, Joseph went after his brothers and found them near Dothan. But they saw him in the distance, and before he reached them, they plotted to kill him. Verse 11, his brothers were what? Jealous. Verse 18, what happened? Killed him. Well, they plotted to kill him. Here, we're going to see this in a couple more verses. Spirit of envy is a gateway to a spirit of murder. Somewhere along the line, we got these sins and we're like, well, don't kill people. Like, don't be a mass murderer. You know, don't do like cocaine because that's bad. You know, God doesn't want you to do cocaine. And don't, we got our list of things that we think is kind of whatever. Envy, I think, doesn't make our list. Because I think if we're honest, we just don't think it's that big of a deal. Because what one of us doesn't want what someone else have. Well, I don't know if that's really that big of a sin. Because I'm just going to tell you, we all. Say we all. We all. We all struggle with the temptation to really want what someone else has. Like, of course, we see stuff and we're like, yeah. And so I think we kind of downplay this. And what I found as going through these scriptures is that every single time, somehow when we give in to envy, because it crops up, you give in to that, and it's a short journey going from, why do they have that? Listen, it's a short journey from going from, why do they have that, to, because they have that, they should die. I hope that's settling into your heart today. And I hope that makes you just a little bit concerned. Like, this is nothing to play with. And that's why Paul is saying love doesn't envy. Like, it guards its heart against envy. Because you cannot do agape love. You cannot consider the good of others when you are envious of them. Because it ultimately, immediately leads to a spirit of murder. Like, you want them, like, how do you get from, and we see it in every single story, how do we get from, well, they have that, or they are that now, well, I wish I had or was that, to, because they're that, it's okay if they don't live anymore. Like, that is bizarre. I'm going to read a few more verses. Look at Saul and David. 1 Samuel 18, verses 6 through 7. When the victorious Israelite army was returning home after David had killed the Philistine, women from all the towns of Israel came out to meet King Saul. They sang and danced for joy with tambourines and cymbals. This was their song. Saul has killed his thousands and David his 10,000s. Now, a great king would be excited that his country just won the war. A great leader is not afraid of other people getting honor and accolades, but Saul was insecure. He was the king. He didn't have anything to prove. But they're singing this song, and it drives him insane. This made Saul very angry. "What's this?" he said. "They credit David with 10,000s and me with only thousands. Next, they'll be making him their king." So from that time on, Saul kept a jealous eye on David. If you care more about who gets the credit, your toes are dabbling in the stream of envy. Ugh. Don't like that statement very much. Do you see what I mean? Like I want you to get this. I don't want you to be depressed, but I want us to grow. I want that rooted out of our hearts if it's in there anywhere. Because it's a destroyer of people. I don't want that thing sitting, lurking, just laying dormant in my heart, waiting to sprout up at some moment that's going to destroy some God-given relationship that I've got that he wants for kingdom purposes. But because I'm envious, I immediately, like, something gets destroyed in it. That's horrible. I don't want it to destroy my marriage. I don't want it to destroy my kids' life. There's parents that are envious of their children. Like, it's insidious. It creeps in. And I want it exposed. I don't want it in my heart. Look at this. So from that time on, Saul kept a jealous eye on David. The very next day. When? The very next day. Tomorrow. A tormenting spirit from God overwhelmed Saul, and he began to rave in his house like a madman. David was playing the harp as he did each day, but Saul had a spear in his hand, and he suddenly hurled at David, intending to pin him to the wall. And if you don't know what that means, literally spear through him, and David would not be singing and playing the harp anymore. He'd be croaked, right? But David escaped him twice. Jealous? What's the very next day? What happens? Murder. We're 3 for 3 here, guys. Like, I wasn't looking for this. This is what emerged out of the Word of God. The Jewish religious leaders and Jesus. Let's see what their story is. Matthew 27, 15 through 16. Now it was the governor's custom each year during the Passover celebration to release one prisoner to the crowd, anyone they wanted. This year, there was a notorious prisoner, a man named Barabbas. As the crowds gathered before Pilate's house that morning, he asked them, "Which one of these do you want me to release to you, Barabbas or Jesus, who is called the Messiah?" Verse 18, watch closely. He knew very well that the religious leaders had arrested Jesus out of what? Envy. Verse 22, it's about 4 verses later. Pilate responded, "Then what should I do with Jesus, who is called Messiah?" They shouted back, "Crucify him." I wish we had the attention that Jesus was getting. He's got a lot of attention. He doesn't need to live anymore. I wish they sang songs about me like they sang about David. He's got good songs. He should die. I wish God accepted my sacrifice like my brother's sacrifice. God really likes him. He should die. Whoa. You guys get that? That's just like, I hope that's just making your liver quiver. Like, that's just, whoa. A guy named by the name of Holman, this was in one of my commentaries, He said this. Look at this. This is so good. Or so bad, really. One may admire another for something that person has, and he may desire many of the same good things for himself. That's okay. But jealousy and envy begin when admiration and desire turn to resentment of others for what they have. It's not just that we can appreciate the good things that other people inspire us to, you know, maybe work harder or earn more money or, you know, do better with our family or, you know, whatever. And that's okay. It's when that admiration turns to resentment is when envy and jealousy start to take root in your heart and in your life. Scott Sauls, I love his preaching. He says this, when envy is, now let me see if any of you, please don't raise your hands, but in your hearts, see if this resonates at all. I hope it does with no one, but boy, I don't know if it might be a little in my heart. When envy is at work, we are comforted when we hear that somebody else is struggling or that they've failed. Ugh. Now just look at me a second. In the last week, in the last month, in the last year, have you ever secretly heard some bad news about somebody and you smiled inside? Well, they got what they deserve. Do you know what I mean? That's rough stuff. Conversely, we feel disturbed when we hear that somebody else is enjoying success or has received an award or a raise or the smallest bit of recognition or some other positive reward. Do you feel comforted when people fail, and do you feel disturbed when people succeed? If at all, it's the seed of envy trying to get planted in your heart and in your spirit. We want to rip that bugger out by the roots. We don't want that. I was driving one time, and I had just this nasty gut-level envy jumped in my heart, and it was nasty. And Marnie happened to be in the car with me at the time. It was probably a year or two ago. And so I just told her about it. I'm like, I'm upset. So-and-so's got this and that and whatever. And like, I just laid it out there. I'm like, this is ugly. It's demonic. I don't want this in my heart. She's like, I know what you mean. And so we talked through it. And I'm like, we don't want this. And so we prayed against it or whatever. But I recognized it right away. And sometimes I don't recognize this. And so that's why I wanted to take the whole morning on this so that you can leave here completely discouraged. But I really want to see us grow. And if this bugger is lurking in your heart, there's death on it. It's laced with cyanide. We don't want envy in our hearts because it takes the blessing that you have and just Satan's like, well, if I can't steal your health or your children or your blessings, then I'll steal your heart for them. Think about that. I'm going to say that again. If you're praying and you've got, you know, you've prayed over your children, they're serving God and you know, you've got health in your body or whatever, or God's healing you or whatever, and Satan's like, oh, well, if I can't steal that and I can't steal your blessings, then I'm going to steal your appreciation of them. And it's just like they were gone. And it opens your heart to a spirit of murder. If you can't touch your stuff, he'll touch your heart about your stuff just by slipping envy in. Wow. We don't have any sharp objects or anything in the room, do we? I'm scared for our emotional health here. We're going to turn a corner in just a second. Before, I'd already had this verse in my slides before I found the connection with envy and murder. And then I got to this as I was just reviewing stuff. I'm like, oh, James, there you are. What causes the quarrels and fights among you? Don't they come from the evil desires that war within you? You want what you don't have, so you what? Scheme and kill. Whoa, I had never seen this connection before. And here it's in four verses in the Old Testament. And now it's in that, and I haven't even looked for others. Like, wow, there is this connection between me being disturbed that you are blessed in a way that I'm not and wanting death to come in your life. Boy, I don't know what, I'm running out of words to use in my response. And this is just real response that I'm saying, ah, because I don't know what else. Like, that's just, it's so assaulting to me to see that connection. This is New Testament here. You're jealous of what others have, and you can't get it, so you fight and wage war to take it away from them. Man. All right, let's keep going before we get too wore out here. We're turning the ship a little bit. We're going to have some smiles here at the end of this. Then I observed, this is in Ecclesiastes, Solomon writing here, I observed that most people are motivated to success because they envy their neighbors. And this too is meaningless. It's like chasing the wind. Envy is a poor motivator for anything godly and good. Albert Barnes says this. I like this. This is kind of cute. It's spiritual and it's true. It's just kind of cute how he says it. We shouldn't envy them because he that is under the influence of Christian love, agape love, what we're talking about, is more happy than those in the world who are usually the objects of envy. What he's saying is the people that you're spending so much emotional energy and spiritual energy envying, if you're walking in love without their stuff or their position or their success or whatever they have, you're probably happier without that stuff anyway. And often they wish they could have internally what's going on inside of you. Good job, Albert. Proverbs 14:30. We're really getting the ship turned now. I want to give you guys some hope in all of this. Proverbs 14:30 says this, a heart at peace gives life to the body, but envy rots the bones. Bones are what holds us up. It's the foundation of who we are, and envy rots that. It destroys our appreciation for anything that we've got, and we're dissatisfied, and it wrecks friendships, and we start thinking people have bad motives when they really don't. Envy is a destroyer of good things. But a heart at peace gives life to the body. How do I keep my heart at peace? I turn my eyes to Jesus, not on other people's stuff and position and success and talents and whatever, fill in the blanks. I keep my eyes on Jesus because he's the Prince of Peace. He's my peace. He's my glory and the lifter of my head. Love is not uneasy at the prosperity of others. We got to get back to 1 Corinthians 13 because this is ultimately describing what love is. What is love and what is love not? Love is not this envious, wanting harm to come from someone because I want their stuff or their position or their power or whatever they are. Love is not uneasy at the prosperity of others. That verse in the Bible that says we rejoice with those who rejoice and we mourn with those who mourn. We enter into their situation. We're not jealous of them. Those who have pure love rejoice as much at the happiness, the honor, and the comfort of others as they can do in their own. I just want to tell you one thing. We celebrated Mary and Dylan yesterday, and we celebrated them today, right? We celebrate when people have birthdays. We sang to Tate today. I think that celebration of others is a great way to war against envy in your life. The church should be really good at celebrating. Often we're not good at it. We're good at rules or we're good at checking boxes or whatever. But sometimes we're not the best at celebrating. If we learn to celebrate others, that gets infectious and that gets in your heart. And you're like, dude, you just got a promotion? Holy cow. Guys, he just got a promotion. That's so cool. And you start doing it maybe just out of, yay, and good for you, you know. But it kind of starts to sink in and seep into your heart. And it starts to soften. It starts to bring a heart at peace. Now you're left with, Johnny got a promotion. That's really cool. I know they were praying for that. I know they were looking forward to that. They've been struggling. That's cool. You go home and tell your wife or whatever. You're like, hey, Johnny got a promotion. I like that. Oh, that's cool. Weren't they praying for that? Yeah, they were praying for that. Do you know what I mean? And it starts to point your heart at the goodness of God instead of the yuck that wants to get planted in our hearts because someone else, you think that they've got something that you should have. Lenski, I don't know, he was in one of my commentaries. I don't know who he is. Love never detracts from the praise that is due another, nor tries to make him seem less and self seem more by comparison. This is old English, so it's kind of hard to read. Instead of being envious, love is satisfied with its own portion, and it's glad of another's greater portion. That grates against our flesh, because there's this probably demonic spirit, but at least evil idea that somehow everything should be fair. We should all be equal, or like, I deserve this. The root of all entitlement is envy. Why should they have that and not me? I deserve. As soon as you start saying, blood coming between your teeth from biting your tongue. As soon as you say, I deserve, it might be true. But as soon as you give in to that, ladies and gentlemen, your funeral is just down the road. Like, we can't live in that. Spiritual death comes after that. I deserve. What do you deserve? You deserve hell and death. What? You can't say that. Jesus paid the price that I owed. That's what I deserve. And the minute I start thinking beyond, don't get me wrong. It doesn't mean that he didn't purchase things for us that I can go ahead and grab by faith. It doesn't mean that. But it's not because I deserve them. There's a difference. One is purchased for me, so I'm going to go ahead and grab a hold of that. One is, you owe this to me, God, or people. I know this is hard stuff, but it is so freeing. Love is satisfied with his own portion and glad of another's portion. Love will experience kind of the same thing, but different way, different font. It's italicized, and it's larger. Love will experience joy at the good fortune of another. And I would just love to see this place full of celebration all the time. And you guys do. And I'm excited about that. When good things happen in people's lives, we should be the first ones to be excited about it. Because that's what love does. Love is the opposite of envy. So love does this. It experiences joy at the good fortune of another. They are ever willing that others should be preferred before them. You're always putting others first and being glad about it. See, that's what envy does. It wants to put me first. And that's the opposite of love. And that's what the Corinthian church was dealing with. They were envious because you had a gift that's better than my gift. And, well, I can prophesy and I can also speak in tongues. Well, yeah, well, I can give words of knowledge. And that's what Paul was dealing with when he was writing this, is it's not envious because envy leads to death. We're just about done. Love is content. Just read through this with me. Everyone wake up. Put your eyes up here. Follow along. This is so good. This is kind of where we're ending just about. Love is content with the life, the talents, the opportunities, and the abilities available to it. You take what's coming to you. You take your life as God is leading you down the path. Is God God or is he not God? Is God sovereign or is he not sovereign? Is God's arm too short to save you? Is God too weak to provide for you? Can God do it or cannot do it? Because that's the question that we're answering when we're dealing with unfair. We're dealing with, God, are you really looking out for me? Or do I have to suck it out of someone else's life? God has got this. And he's orchestrating your path. He's guiding your footsteps. Submit your heart to the Lord. Let your heart be guided by God. And forget about what other people have unless you're remembering to rejoice with them. Love is content with the life, the talents, the opportunities, the abilities available to it. Love makes good use of what comes its way. And what envy does is it steals every opportunity and blessing that you have because you're so busy focused on why someone else shouldn't have what you should have. Sorry, got a little wound up there. Pastor Fearing would say, give the Lord a praise. Give the Lord praise. Sound appealing? Sound liberating and refreshing? It does to me. It does to me. We're meant to live in freedom, and envy puts you in a prison. And it's so subtle. and you don't think that you really are, and it creeps in there. Love, and we're going to finish with this. I'll leave that right up there. Love refuses to live someone else's life. Come on. It's about you and Jesus serving and loving others. You got what you got. If you need more, God said to David, if you had needed more than that, I would have given you more. Why did you have to envy someone else's wife and take her? And I just thought about that right now. David said, man, Uriah's got a hot wife. Oh, I should have a hot wife. Goes and grabs a woman. Guess what came next? Death. Oh, we got to kill Uriah. Just thought about that. It's the same pattern. Envy opens up your heart to a spirit of death. Not to be overly morbid, but I'm just telling you what is coming out of the scripture here. Why would we want to mess with that? Why would I not want to be excited about Jeff's success? Why would I not want to celebrate Tate's wins and touchdowns? I mean, I could do it better, but, you know, I'll be happy for you. Right? Why wouldn't we? Because we're insecure. Because we're focused on us. Because we're not looking at Jesus. Because we think God's too weak, so I got to help him out. Because we're selfish. And we're not laying down our lives. And we're living for me instead of for Christ. And that's not in a bashing way. That's just the honest. I'm just telling you what my heart looks like on Tuesday, right? That's the struggle that we go through every day. And so I just wanted to say, envy is a bad place to live. Let's love. Let's love. Let's love. And love doesn't envy. Love does not envy. So if you're grumbling as you're handing out stuff to people, because I don't know why they get new stuff. Hold on. We missed the boat completely. We'll end there today.